This is Biasbender, and I'm Kayla Stokes. Welcome to the next episode of this podcast, where we are exploring the lives of Black women from the past and the present in order to imagine the future. This week's episode is about Christia Adair and securing our vote. Hi, everyone. How are you holding up this week? I think I've definitely been hit by the spring bug. My allergies are wreaking havoc, but I'm also feeling that tingly everything is new and anything can happen feeling. So I am complaining about the allergies along with all the other troubling things going on in the world, but I'm also trying to soak up all the optimism I can that's floating around in the warm spring air right now. Anywho, there's something about the weather changing and me being home with my family that has me thinking about voting. Yeah, I guess that doesn't necessarily make sense, so let me explain. The first time I ever voted was in a primary election because I turned 18 in January. At the time, I lived really close to my polling station, so I was able to walk over with my dog and cast my very first vote in June. So there's something about walking my dog around my neighborhood in newly warm weather that reminds me of that first primary. And a bunch of years later, the next primary is coming up in my area. It's on June 8th, so if you are a New Jersey voter and you haven't already registered to vote, now is a great time. And if you aren't a New Jersey voter, please don't forget to check when your next election is. If you can't tell, I love getting the chance to vote. I enjoy researching candidates and figuring out who aligns with my beliefs, and there's something really exciting to me about dissecting those special ballot measures when you get to vote yes or no on new laws and stuff. I'm no expert, but I do value my ability to participate in the election systems we have. And to be honest, sometimes I can be really cynical about if my participation even matters or if our democratic system is benefiting folks who look like me. But I continue to participate and cast my vote whenever I can, because if I'm not trying to do something, I don't think I would have the right to complain. And not for nothing, I would not have been able to vote at all if I grew up in a different time or in a different place, and I don't take that lightly. Every time I vote, I'm thinking about the future, but I'm also thinking about the past and all that went into securing my right to vote. So this week, I want to talk about a corner of the history that went into making sure more people could vote, specifically in primary elections here in the U.S. And yes, we are, of course, going to chat about a Black woman who I think you ought to know about. All right, let's get into it. Okay, so let's talk about Christia Adair. She was born on October 22nd in 1893 in Victoria, Texas. At the time, her name was Christia Daniels, and her parents were Ada and Hardy Daniels. Her mother was actually a laundress, and if you listen to just two episodes before this one, you'll know I have quite the soft spot for laundresses now. Anyway, Christia spent her early life chasing education. She started off at a small school in Edna, Texas, and from there she went on to attend high school at Samuel Huston College in Austin. Once she graduated from high school, she attended college at Prairie View State Normal and Industrial College, which is now known as Prairie View A&M University. Christia trained to be an educator, so she wound up teaching in both Edna and Vanderbilt after college. A little later down the road, she married a man named Elbert H. Adair, which is the most endearing Southern name I've heard in a while. She became Christia Adair, and the couple moved to Kingsville. Now, they started their life together in 1918. Times were a-changing, and Christia was very much a part of moving things forward even at the beginning of her adulthood. Not only was she working on educating kids through the Sunday school she started, but she was also an active suffragist. In fact, she was one of the very few Black female suffragists in Texas at the time. So, you can imagine that when the 19th Amendment passed in 1919 and then was finally ratified in 1920, Christia was pretty excited. As a quick reminder, the 19th Amendment is the constitutional amendment that grants women the right to vote. I took out my handy-dandy pocket constitution because I'm a nerd, and I found the exact language of the amendment, so here you go. So, yeah, if you were a suffragist during this time, I bet you'd be pretty excited by that language showing up in the Constitution. And if you were a Black suffragist like Christia, you had two amendments on your side, finally. First, the 15th Amendment, which says, you can vote if you're a Black man, and the 19th, which says, oh, and if you're a woman, you can vote too. And, well, Christia was excited to vote. And just like in my situation, the first election she was eligible to vote in was a primary. So she took herself down to her polling station and she tried to vote. But it turns out that the 19th Amendment wasn't her ticket to voting rights in this case. And, well, this is news to me, but in Texas, they had what they called white primaries. And yes, that name is as bad as you think it's going to be. Basically, Christia wasn't allowed to vote in the primary elections in Texas because she was Black. And any Black person in Texas was not welcome to vote in the primaries, even though the 15th Amendment and the 19th Amendment had already been ratified. Like, what? How is that even possible? Y'all, American history is crazy, and if there has ever been even a slight loophole, it feels like it's somehow been taken advantage of here. So, I'm definitely not an expert, but from the reading I've done to try and understand how this is possible, I found some eye-opening stuff out. So, if we rewind to Reconstruction in the South, we are transported back to a time where Black folks are newly freed from slavery, and they, of course, want to participate in the world around them. And, well, a lot of white people didn't really feel so great about Black people being able to do anything. And, of course, one of those things was voting. So, lawmakers in Texas established a poll tax. Of course, if you are asked to pay in order to vote, that might be tough if you don't have a lot of extra money. And who typically didn't have a lot of extra money laying around during Reconstruction? Well, poor white people and a lot of Black people. So the poll tax kept Black people from voting if they didn't have any money. But it wasn't a perfect way to keep Black people out of the democratic process because it turns out that some Black people had extra money and they used that money to vote. Conveniently, Texas legislators created a state law that allowed parties to establish their own internal rules. Seems fair enough, but the Texas Democratic Party decided that it would use this law to really get rid of the problem they saw in Black people exercising their right to vote. They argued that the Democratic Party was not a part of the United States government, so they didn't have to play by the same rules. So, one of the rules they established and enforced was that their primary elections would only include white voters, hence white primaries. And on top of that, at the time, the Democratic Party kind of reigned supreme in Texas, so it was really the only primary that meant something if you wanted to be a part of electing an official. So, yeah, that is how Christia was turned away from voting. Gross, right? Well, Christia didn't forget that experience. She quickly saw that joining forces with white female suffragists would only get her so far. In 1925, when she and her husband moved to Houston, Christia joined the local branch of the NAACP. And that's where she stayed active in her fight for equal rights for a long time. She worked with the NAACP for 25 years before being appointed to executive secretary in 1943. This was also the year that Christia's husband, Albert, passed away. I don't know what it was like for her to lose her husband, but from my end, reading about what life had in store for her after that point, it seems as though she really poured herself into her work after losing him. Christia served as the executive secretary during a momentous case that the NAACP brought against a local election judge. I honestly can't believe I didn't know about this case until now, but here we are. So, in 1944, a case was brought to the Supreme Court all the way from Texas. It involved a black dentist who was from Harris County. His name was Lonnie E. Smith, and he was turned away from voting in a primary election because of the color of his skin, despite the 14th and 15th Amendments, just like Christia was. His lawyer was none other than Thurgood Marshall. Marshall argued that Smith was denied his constitutional rights granted to him by the 14th and 15th Amendments. And in the case of Smith versus Allwright, the black dentist from Harris County, Texas, was the victor. The court decided that Texas was being totally discriminatory with its white primaries. It seems obvious now, but I'm glad this case was able to put that fact out for the whole country to see. This case was a huge victory for everyone involved and for folks across the country. This was an important step forward in securing voting rights for people who were victims of manipulative loopholes. It makes me think about how we are still seeing lawmakers trying their darndest to make voting difficult, and that makes my blood boil. If we live in a democracy, why not make it as easy as possible to vote? Anyway, Christia played a huge role in leading the NAACP during this period of time. She helped the organization do what it needed to do in order to win this historic case. And for that alone, I am indebted to her. Because of Christia and all her counterparts, I can move to Texas and vote in any primary I want to. And I am thankful for that. Christia didn't stop there. She kept working for the NAACP even when it became a dangerous cause. The Supreme Court case, along with other initiatives, made the NAACP a target for aggression and threats. Being the executive secretary was not the safest gig in the world, but Christia held her own and stayed with it. At one point, the Houston police tried to obtain a list of members and other information from the organization. The police claimed that they needed this information on the basis of barratry, which basically means that they thought the lawyers involved in the NAACP were trying to get people to get involved in court cases when there was no legal reason to do so. Christia didn't believe this charge at all, but instead she thought that the police wanted their records so they could destroy the chapter and intimidate them out of continuing their civil rights work. So, even when she was questioned and had to testify for 5 hours in the case against the organization, Christia denied having any information on NAACP membership. Eventually, Thurgood Marshall returned to the Supreme Court with this new case and won again. I say all this to say that Christia Adair was down for the cause. Her work was so deeply rooted in equality and civil rights for her whole life, and she was able to get a lot done. While she wasn't working on voting rights, she was working hard to desegregate other areas of life, too. There are so many things that Christia did during her lifetime, but I'll just rattle off a few things that you can thank her for. If you have ever been to a desegregated public library, airport, veterans hospital, or city bus in the great city of Houston, you can thank Christia. If you have ever seen a black person serving on a jury in Houston, you can thank her too. If you have tried on clothing in a desegregated fitting room while shopping at a department store in Houston, go ahead and thank Christia. And if you've ever read a newspaper and the black people have the same titles as the white people who are being written about, you can also thank Christia Adair. This is, of course, a completely non-exhaustive list of things Christia played a part in desegregating during her career. She was dedicated to making the world a more equitable place, all the way from her early adulthood to the time she was well into her 80s and serving as a county clerk for absentee voting. Christia made voting easier. Christia passed away on December 31st, 1989, at the age of 96. She left behind a legacy of action and righteousness. I am indebted to her work, and I am so glad I know about her now. So, when I am voting in the upcoming primary, I'm going to be thinking of her and all the work she did to make my life that much more equal. And that's the story of Christia Adair. Whew. I don't know about you, but I am going to be thinking about Christia and all the things she's done for us for some while. I say this a lot, but if you want to know more about her and her work, I would so encourage you to give her a Google. You'll learn so much more than what I've shared in this episode, and as with all the women I've discussed so far, she is worth your time. Shoot, if you're in Texas, specifically Houston, I hope you visit her park someday. It's of course called the Christia Adair Park, and based on the pictures and info from Google Maps, it looks like a great place to have a picnic or take your dog for a walk in honor of a powerful activist. This week, I am thinking about how very interesting our laws and constitution are when you take time to read them. It's wild that a few sentences tacked onto a super old document can have such profound consequences for our lives. Huh, maybe I should be a lawyer. But maybe not, because, geez, if I think about it too hard, I get either infuriated or completely jaded. Is that what it's like to be a lawyer? Let me know if you have any insight on that. Anyway, if you don't have a voting plan for your next election, I'm here to remind you that today is a great day to figure one out. I'll leave a link to some voting resources in the description of this episode. Every election is a big election, folks. If Christia's story doesn't prove that, I don't know what will. All right, that is all I have for you this week. I will catch you next time, and until then, thank you so much for listening. I used the following sources to research this week's episode: Texas State Historical Association's article, Adair, Christia V. Daniels, by Nancy Baker Jones; Texas Woman University's article, Christia V. Daniels Adair; Women in Texas History's article on Christia Adair; Women'sActivism.nyc's article on Christia Adair by Denise Roper; National Archives information on the 19th and 15th Amendments; my pocket constitution; Hoyez's page on Smith versus Allwright; the NAACP Legal Defense and Educational Funds page on Smith v. Allwright. This podcast is supported in part by a Four Culture ARC Artist Fellowship, and original music, as always, by Adam Westerman. Hello, post-episode Kayla here. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode as much as I did. Wasn't it fun? No? Just me? All right. Anyway, if you did enjoy it, please feel free to support the podcast by telling a friend about it. Or if you want to leave a lovely review, that also helps. If you want to just rate it 5 stars, that helps too. And if you want each episode to show up on your phone as soon as they're out, go ahead and subscribe or follow this podcast wherever you listen to it. All right, that's all I got for you. See you later.